a gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Dave and Dejanovic.
Did you see that massive volcanic explosion, eruption under the water? Dave, it's just wreaked havoc on Tonga.
Incredible. I mean, it was shocking, Debbie, to actually see this eruption underwater, but you can see it. I mean, you can see the concussion. It was like a bomb went off, which is essentially what happened.
And then it was followed by tsunamis. The way it was described, it sounds like the tsunamis, the water, the massive amounts of water have just eaten away at the shoreline. Three people are dead. Hundreds of homes destroyed. And there's still a threat because they've got ash now all over the island, which can cause some serious health problems. And so now there's also the issue of lack of clean water, Dave.
Yes, I'm not even going to try to pronounce the volcano, but it was really close to Tonga, only, what, about 20 miles off the coast of Tonga. And this ash, this plume of ash and gas and steam shot 12 miles into the air. This is after going through the filter of seawater, right? I mean, how enormous would this have been had it not had the sea completely covering this volcano?
In a moment, we're going to talk to a woman who has been living in Utah for a couple of years, trying to get back to Tonga. That's where she's from, but has been shut out of Tonga getting back because of the pandemic and protocols. I want to, before we get her live into this conversation, Dave, Jamie Farrell at the Department of Geology and Geophysics at the University of Utah says that the volcanic eruption produced an event that's equivalent to a 5.3 level earthquake. Let's hear what he had to say.
I think the most common way a volcanic eruption can trigger tsunami is part of the volcano collapses underwater and displaces a large amount of water.
And you could start to see people preparing for it, preparing for those tsunamis and recording videos, and you see the waves start coming in.
It seemed like the volcano came out of nowhere, at least the eruption came out of nowhere, because the videos that I've seen of people who were just maybe taking video at the beach, all of a sudden it just seems like they were shocked. I'm not sure if they had a warning that this could blow at any moment, but even as far away as Alaska, I was listening to interviews and discussions. People who were living there who woke up in the middle not knowing what in the world was going on. They heard it or it sounded to them like there was some sort of an explosion. And that's thousands of miles away, Dave.
Yes. Incredible. The power. It's hard to comprehend the power of this volcano. That it was able to reach out the shockwaves, so to speak. The shockwaves, which end up being in wave form in a tsunami, for thousands of miles.
Did you know, Dave, we looked up some data today. I did not know this. A fourth of Tongans who live in the United States live in Utah.
That doesn't surprise me.
2011 report from the Salt Lake Tribune. And then we flip over to the Utah Department of Health. Nearly 38,000 Native Hawaiians and Pacific Islanders reside in Utah. 68% of them are from Tonga.
There's a few things going on there, Debbie, and part of the reason why the Pacific Islander population in Utah is in the Pacific Islands.
Okay.
So the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints has done a lot of missionary work in the Pacific Islands, and a lot of baptized or converted members end up coming to Utah. So that's one part of it. Another part that is, you know, maybe a little smaller, but there's an extremely high number of football players recruiting that is going on in the islands to play football at the University of Utah, Weber and BYU, Coach Kalani Sitake. He's from Tonga. And there's been a massive recruiting effort for football and sports reasons. So again, that brings players here, that brings families here. So it doesn't surprise me that a quarter of Tongans living in the United States are right here in Utah.
Let's bring on our guest, Verna Tukafua. I don't think I said your name right, even after all of that and practicing it, Verna. Why don't you say your last name for me?
Hi, my name is Verna Tukafua.
Thank you so much, Verna, for calling. I know you've been, I want to say, stuck in Utah for 2 years because Tonga closed its borders in 2020 because of the pandemic, has not reopened. Have you been able to contact your family in Tonga?
Yes, not direct communication. We have been getting some information from them through people, through diplomats that have satellite phones. So we were able to reach out to them and they would call our families. And then it's kind of like a relay of message, pass on the message and then they will try and find them and then pass the message back to me that they're okay. And that's how the communication has been in the last couple of days.
So Verna, give us an idea. What is happening in Tonga right now?
So right now, you know, like I mentioned before, communication is very, very limited. When the volcanic eruption happened, it was just a complete blackout. We didn't know what was going on. All we knew was, the videos that were coming before the communication was cut off. But what we have heard so far is that there's extensive damage to some of our outer islands. The main island, the coastal line, was completely affected. It was affected by the tsunami, and the western coast of the main island, western side of the island also has... a lot of houses are destroyed and severely damaged. Like what you mentioned earlier, they've confirmed three deaths. One was a UK national, and then a 65-year-old woman and a 49-year-old male.
Verna, but your family, from what you know, is okay and safe?
Yes, so far as we, from what I have received, our families is safe.
It's been so long for you, having been in Utah. Can you tell us a little bit about that story of what it's been like for you? Were you visiting Utah and then you couldn't get back because of COVID?
Yes. So we, my husband and I, we have three kids. Our oldest daughter was attending the Brigham Young University in Hawaii, and she was planning to go on a mission. And so we thought we would come up for her spring break, which was in March, kind of like our last family vacation before she goes off and then everybody else starts to go off. So we came up to Hawaii on a Tuesday. We arrived on a Tuesday, and the borders with no announcement or anything just closed on us on a Friday, so we weren't able to return back home.
Verna, is there anything that Utahns can be doing right now to help families in Tonga? I guess I just don't know what to do, and I want to help if I can.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that have reached out to me to try and see if, you know, what is it that we could do The best thing that we have been advising, and this is just based on the feedback that we have been receiving from the ground, is what is needed most over there is really clean water to drink, and also masks, because the country is just completely covered in ashes. But I know that New Zealand and Australia are actually, because they're much closer, are already acting on that. So we're just waiting for a more detailed assessment to understand what are the other needs that we would be able to help. But I know the Polynesian community, not just the Tongan community, but Polynesian community and just everyone here in Utah are just pulling together, you know, just various things like clothes, canned food, whatever they could, and just starting to pack things. Once they give us the green light, then we'll start sending containers to Tonga.
Verta Tukuafu, thank you so much for joining us. Best of luck. I know these last couple of years must have been just so incredibly difficult, and for another tragedy to hit that island is just incredible.
I want Verna to keep us posted on how we can help, what we can do here locally to help those folks who are in Tonga. She said there's need clean water because the water supplies contaminated after that horrible volcanic eruption. It seemed to almost come out of the blue, destroyed the shoreline, has destroyed many homes, has killed three people. We'll continue to follow those developments and find out where we can donate. Once we know, we'll let you know.
Eye on the Hill 2022. In-depth coverage on KSL News Radio.
Of all the things that we've talked about today, dealing with proposals on Capitol Hill, this one is most important for your teen girls. There's a new pitch on the Hill to make feminine hygiene products available and free in Utah schools K through 12. And I love this.
Oh, yeah. This makes so much sense. It's kind of embarrassing that we didn't think of this before. The fact that this is a thing is crazy.
I love that you're on Team Teen Girls.
Oh, yeah. Girl Dad right here.
Okay. I was going to ask, this has something to do with the fact that you're raising a teenage girl. Absolutely. So as a teen girl, there's few things. I can't think of anything in high school at that age that was more humiliating, Dave, than being caught empty-handed in school when that time of the month starts. You either got to turn to a friend and ask them if you can borrow what they have in the bottom of their backpack, or you got to call mom, right? You got to call mom. And yep. As a mom of two teen girls, now well into their 20s, I'm sure they don't mind me divulging this on the radio. Dave, I can't count.
Oh, I'm sure they love it, Deb. They love you talking about this.
I cannot count how many times I'd be in the middle of an interview when I was working for KSL5 TV, and I'd get the text or the frantic phone call. Mom, drop everything. I don't care who you're interviewing, and get to the school. And they went to Brighton High School, and we're in downtown Salt Lake. And sometimes they'd even be in another county on an interview. And you'd be the worst mom in the world not to drop everything and race to the school and either pick them up and bring them home or take them what they need.
So the idea would be what?
To provide dispensers and free product for all girls K through 12 in Utah. Free hygiene products. Feminine hygiene products.
Let's get it done. Sign it up.
Emily Bell. Go ahead.
Like, who's fighting you on this?
Emily Bell McCormick of Utah's Period Project. Good morning. Thanks for jumping on the line with us, Emily.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Well, we both support it, so what's taking so long to get these dispensers products in schools?
I just need you two to be in the legislature, and then we're going to get this done, you know? No, we're really excited. I mean, I think we've got a lot of momentum, and I think, you know, ideas just take a minute to warm up to, and I think this one in particular is kind of interesting because it's been kind of, you know, we have a heavily male legislature, and we also have a culture where we really want to be, you know, let people keep things private if they need to. And in the past, periods have just been private. You know, they're one of those things we haven't talked about. There's like some embarrassment, a little bit of shame around it. And I think we're finally at a point of time where it's like, you know, this is just such a basic, basic need. I loved your intro. It was perfect because it really just goes to show it's something that's just been overlooked. It's actually unbelievable. This hasn't been done before. You know, we've got toilet paper in the bathroom. We have hand soap. We have paper towels. But like period products. You know, you can hold number one or number two if you need to go to the bathroom. But with periods, you can't hold that. It's more like a bloody nose. You know, when it starts, you got to take care of it right then. And so just recognizing that and getting this done for our girls, it's a really exciting moment.
Emily, recognition, that's a great way to describe it. Because I remember, you know, when I was a teenage boy, I would see the girls just get up and leave. Like, they wouldn't ask permission or anything. And I'm like, why did they get to just get up and leave? I had absolutely no understanding as a teenage boy. Now, right. As a father of daughter, I'm like, oh, yeah. No, you, like, listen. It makes so much sense. Okay, how much is it going to cost? What's the investment? What's the hurdle? What's the hiccup?
Yeah. Great questions. Okay. So the cost is actually, it's not that much. To fill the dispensers, it's going to cost the state between $1 and $3 million. So there isn't like a ton of fabulous data around this yet because we haven't ever done it. So we'll see what girls end up using based on other states and kind of, you know, what happens this first year. So the cost will be $1 to $3 million. Getting the dispensers in schools is going to cost a bit too. That we see that being around $2 million, but we have this great public-private partnership going on here, where the Larry H. and Gail Miller Family Foundation and the Andrus Family Foundation are donating the $2 million to get dispensers into every single public and charter school in the state, to every girls' bathroom and all gender bathroom. So the dispensers are covered by this like private partnership, which is really cool. So all we're asking the legislature to do is to provide the product. Like, let's fill those dispensers for the girls. Because the one thing we find is, you know, if they don't have, it's exactly like you guys were chatting about in the intro. Listen, the girls, if they have an accident at school, if they're not able to care for their period, they're not staying in school. Right. They're going home. Right. You know, and this is every girl. Every month, 3 to 5 days a month is the average period. And this is for the majority of their public schooling, you know, or their school life. And so we need to take care of that because it really contributes to like chronic absenteeism and those things. So the cost is so small to increase attendance, you know, it has this like great effect.
And the humiliation that goes along with it too, Emily, that right. You can't put a price tag on I felt as a teen girl in high school when that time of the month would start and I was stuck in English class and I just, look, I'd forget to put deodorant on in the morning. Like, that's how right. kind of like, you know, like I just didn't have my act together. Not that I do anymore now, but you'd forget your tampon or you'd forget the pad and you'd be stuck in English and then you're begging or you're running to the office and you can't put a price tag on that humiliation.
Yeah,
Emily,
that's exactly right.
Emily Bell McCormick of Utah's Period Project promised to return to the show. Let us know what the status is and let us know what lawmakers
Who gets in your way?
Let us know.
Oh, I'll let you know.
We'll send someone up to Capitol Hill. So, Emily, thanks for jumping on and having a very, very frank discussion. And, Dave, I'm really glad to see that you're on board with this.
Totally on board. Absolutely. And especially, you know, we want to be very sensitive for kids that are in struggling conditions, you know, low income, where some of these necessities are not so readily available. Let's have an abundance of understanding. Let's invest in this. It makes all the sense in the world. If this isn't 100% like rubber stamp, make it happen, well, especially 'cause I would be shocked.
The dispensers are already paid for by that public-private partnership. It is a no-brainer in my book, too. And think about how many parents would be saved from dropping everything and running to their kid's school, their daughter's school, to pick them up and bring them home. So can't wait to hear an update on how that does on Capitol Hill.
It will sail through. Like, I have absolutely no doubt in this.
Straight ahead, I want to talk about the sea of debris that is on the train tracks all over Los Angeles right now. and why this could explain your Amazon package is going to be a little bit late.
Dujanovic.
Here's some exciting news. Dave and Dujanovic are now with you all the way to noon.
This is Tim and Amanda. Listen for breaking news from 5 to 9.
And then discussion of the news with Dave and Debbie from 9 to noon.
On KSL News Radio.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was 3 blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com. Follow us on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen.